You listen to the Jason Greger Show, presented by PlayAlberta.ca. Remember, if you gamble, use your game sense. Stay within your limits. Go to GameSense.AB.ca. And speaking of lineup changes, the Red Bull, we know who their starter is, but the backup, if we want to call it that, in racing, you know, Liam Lawson's kind of being up and down. What do you make of Red Bull? And they can't catch McLaren, so they can really use these final races as somewhat to decide what they're going to do with their second car.
I think they've already decided.
Okay.
This year, obviously, the second seat at Red Bull has been shared by Lawson. They only gave him two races and punted him down, knocked Yuki Tsunoda up. Yuki's maybe done a bit better in that seat than Lawson did. Lawson candidly was doing okay when he went back to the RB team. Had a terrible weekend in Singapore. But yeah, it looks like
Hadjar, is that the guy?
Hadjar should move up to Red Bull next year. And then it looks like they're going to likely part with Lawson. They're likely going to part with Tsunoda and work with like Arvid Lindblad, Alex Dunn. There's a bunch of junior drivers that are either current F2 that they're kind of going into rebuild mode.
Okay. Of those drivers, Dunn or... Lindblad, do you know enough about either one to think that which one would be a better fit?
Dunn's had a really, really solid F2 campaign until this week. Last week, he was a McLaren development driver. The fact that he ended that association was the indication that something else was going on. Not sure that Dunn would move up next year or if they would kind of do one F2 year as a Red Bull development driver and then look at potentially moving him up in 2027. Lindblad is also another solid contender. The thing is, this all falls under Skeletor, Helmut Marko, who is just vicious when it comes to their junior drivers for sure. Who was it? Lawson had a pretty good weekend two races ago. He said, I knew it was a good weekend because I didn't hear from Helmut. And he's like, when you have a bad weekend, he'll call you at 6 o'clock the next morning and you're expected to answer when he's on the phone because, you know, he'll rip the guys to pieces, but he doesn't do a lot of rebuilding. And even in the army, I mean, I'm a former soldier. You get torn down, but then you get built back up, and they just don't seem to have that. You know, Max was able to kind of get through that because he was kind of the chosen one, and he had success right from the beginning. They've developed that program around him, so he doesn't have to deal with any of that, especially now that he's a four-time champion. But you know, clearly their driver lineup since, you know, Daniel Ricciardo was beside Verstappen has been questionable at best.
Cadillac is going to join F1 next year, which will mean 22 cars on the track. And that'll change qualifying a bit because now it'll go 22 and then they'll drop six the first time and then they'll go to 16 and then they'll drop six again. It'll still be 10 who battle it out for Q3. But do you have any, have they announced who their drivers are?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Valtteri Bottas and Sergio Perez.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, that's confirmed.
Okay, so they got two veterans in there. What's your expectations for Cadillac?
Not much. Candidly, it's going to be a brand new...
It's like an expansion team for anybody out there who's not a racing fan. Like, it's like an expansion team in hockey?
It is. They're jumping in at the new regulation, you know, period. They won't have any established experience with any of the chassis. It's a brand new chassis next year. They're running the Ferrari engine. Now, while the Ferrari engine seems like it's making decent power, Ferrari obviously hasn't had a lot of success just the way their chassis is.
Yeah.
Expectations are very, very low. Just me personally. Bottas, I believe, still has the capability to drive. Perez, I don't know what he's going to bring to the table, but I think the long-term program is they want to run Colton Herta who has run an IndyCar the last bunch of years. They want to start him in an F2 campaign, potentially as early as this year already, with the hopes that he can get enough points to move up there in the next year or so.
Now, there's this big lawsuit going on with McLaren and Alex Palou, who's the best driver in IndyCar. Yeah. And he had left Chip Ganassi to join the McLaren's IndyCar program back in 2023. Then Chip Ganassi said they held an option on Palou, which they were exercising. They went to court, and they found that Ganassi held his rights. But now McLaren's suing him. Like, there's a personal suing against Palou. Like, why?
Because what McLaren is saying is that they signed, like, he agreed to sign with McLaren. That's not in dispute.
So they're saying he didn't know his own contract?
They're saying that he signed a contract that he shouldn't have been able to sign.
Yeah.
But because the breach happened in the States, that's where they first went to court. Ganassi proved that his option on Palou was the first line. Now McLaren is saying that it's, you know, they've suffered $20 million in damages. But as the case is unfolding, there's a lot of really, really strange stuff, because this all goes back to the same time that McLaren also signed Oscar Piastri. Before, like, people maybe forget, Piastri was affiliated with Alpine. And Alpine basically rushed the gun and said, hey, we're signing Piastri. Piastri very famously, and it's become every time somebody makes a signing now, the joke is that, you know, he said Alpine have released a statement without my consent saying that I'll drive for them. It's like, I haven't signed anything. I'm not going to be with Alpine. I'm going to be racing with McLaren. So what it sounds like happened behind the scenes is that Zach Brown was going after Palou with the idea, like, look, move over to our McLaren IndyCar team. This is going to position you to move up to be with our F1 team. He saw that once they signed Piastri, there's no more seat available for him. So he went back, you know, obviously Ganassi fought for him, and very wisely, because now he's a four-time champion. But yeah, it sounds like some of the transcript I read today shows that a lot of the negotiation was done over WhatsApp, and a lot of the communication was done over WhatsApp, which they ended up deleting messages, which now Palou's people are saying they destroyed evidence. So it has the potential to get a little bit uglier before it gets any better.
Do you think this pretty much ends any chance Palou has of coming back to F1?
Oh yeah. Now that he's like 28, it's not practical. Like, even if he wanted to go.
Like, why? If he's a really good driver, like, why would they care about age?
It gets to be a little bit late, because the F1 style is so different from an IndyCar. Like, what you have to do in the car, the systems, the style, like, everything's different.
Right.
You know, I don't know that there's a hockey comparison, like, you know, learning to go play in the KHL versus playing in the NHL. But the closest would probably be if you're running Olympic ice versus NHL ice, trying to figure out how to play that faster, longer passing game. But, you know, if you can start in F2 when you're 18 years old and, you know, kind of associate yourself with the teams, grow up in their systems, and then even going from F2 to F1 is a massive jump, but going across from IndyCar, it's happened. It's just not all that easy.
Okay. And, I don't know if we really want to recap and kind of know what happened in F1, but Christian Horner reportedly for millions of dollars settled the inappropriate behavior lawsuit against a former employee. Do you think he's done in F1, isn't he?
I am not sure, because I can't really properly complete the sentence, but money talks and BS walks. He has fairly deep pockets. He can come to the table with a decent amount of cash behind him. I don't think he would want to come back as just a team principal. He would want to have a stake, kind of like what Toto Wolff has done.
Okay.
It really sounds like there's not a lot of interest.
Yes.
The only place that it seems like there might be a home for him is at Alpine, with, you know, Flavio is essentially a part-time guy. He has no ethical qualms whatsoever, other than racing. Like, it wouldn't matter what you did in your personal life, what you're guilty of, as long as you can be effective within the team is all he cares about. And, you know, he's been caught cheating and manipulating more than anyone. I don't know where else he could end up, but I'd say it's fairly unlikely. I don't know why he would want to, other than for ego, because he's, you know, been part of 8 drivers' championships, right, numerous constructors' championships, built the team from the ground up, essentially. To go back and potentially have, you know, like we're seeing sort of with Lewis Hamilton, not quite the same comparison, but why he would want to kind of go through and risk what has, like, he doesn't need money. Mm-hmm. He, you know, maybe wants to stay part of it, but he could always invest in a team. I guess the answer is I don't know. I think it's unlikely, but, you know, a lot stranger things have happened in Formula One, that's for sure.
That is very true. Colin, great stuff, buddy. We'll talk about the next race next Thursday. Have yourself a great weekend.
Thank you very much.